Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world. It's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Throw game for the win! Is gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy. Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here, Jim Coyle.
Hey, everybody. Welcome aboard another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. So glad to have you along, no matter where or how you're listening to us, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, or on the Voice of the Region up in the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJLB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380, The Fan. Keep it locked where you got it throughout your travels during the day, because you're in the right spot. If you're following my social media, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, all that rigmarole. Appreciate you. Another big lineup today. Dylan Sin will join us from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Gal Nedrep from the Indy Star. K-Brew will join us, and Zach Browning, as we'll get you caught up and ahead of the game on what's going on. Some big games in the Big Ten this weekend, of course. A lot of attention being paid to Major League Baseball right now as the some thrillers coming down for the playoffs. And ironically, I have K-Bro on the program today. He's a big Mets fan. I'm a Reds fan. Man, the Mets have a lot to do to lock down a postseason return, and that could be, it would be considered the biggest collapse in Major League Baseball with the payroll that they have. We'll talk to Cabro about that when he joins us. But man, they got a comeback win at Wrigley Field on Tuesday. And the thing is that the Reds just swept the Cubs in a 4-game series. The Cubs have already made the playoffs, so they're not working all that hard. It's going to be interesting coming down the end of this deal. So the Mets had a 9-7 comeback win over the Cubs last night. They had a real short stint by their starter, and so we'll see. We'll see how it goes, man. Daggone it. What did the Reds do last night? I guess they must have lost. They did. Damn, lost to Pittsburgh. Come on. Come on, man. 4-2. The Reds have the destiny in their hands because they have the tiebreaker with the Mets. Doesn't do you a lot of good when you're a game behind, as they are right now. So they'll have to make that up. We'll keep up with that action. Man, what are you going to do? We'll get caught up on this weekend's football games in the Big Ten, of course, Indiana and Iowa. We'll hear from Kurt Cignetti as well, in addition to everybody else. As a matter of fact, with such a crowded program today, let's hear what Kurt Cignetti had to say in his opening presser of the game week presser for this week.
All right, good win Saturday night. Regardless of the final score, there's always things that show up on tape that got to get corrected. And believe me, there's plenty there. So really more interested in moving on to our next opponent, which will be a real challenge at Iowa. Got a lot of respect for Coach Ferentz, everything he's accomplished throughout his career as a head coach and as an assistant too. You know, he's a great line coach before he became a head coach. And he was a graduate assistant at Pitt in 1980. I was a graduate assistant at Pitt in 83 and 84. He's come by the offices now and then Had a chance to meet him, met him a couple times out and around, got to know him during the Big Ten meetings, so congratulate him, on the big win a couple weeks ago to make him the most, the winningest coach in the Big Ten. And Iowa, it's a tough place to play, Kinnick Stadium. They sell it out almost every Saturday. It's loud. And so we're going to play well. This will be a challenge, a more difficult challenge than the last one for sure. And the sooner our guys realize that, the better.
Kurt, you talk about your history with Coach Ferentz, but I'm just curious if you have any history with Kinnick. Obviously, it's a place that is very difficult to go, one of the tougher environments in the conference, and kind of has been, I think, particularly for, you know, sort of teams that as you talk about, need that refocusing quickly after a big win.
Yeah, I do not.
Yes, Pete? Yeah, Kurt. Brian Haynes seems to be really mixing up his personnel with the front seven. Do you feel like you guys are more versatile there this year? And it seemed to make a difference on Saturday in terms of Illinois didn't really know what you guys were doing, couldn't diagnose things. But do you feel like that's been a
strength? Yeah, Brian always mixes things up pretty good, finds ways to get to quarterback, create TFLs. I don't think anything has changed in that regard. That was probably more about the one-on-one matchups. But, look, I mean, you know, we have some egregious mistakes in the back end, particularly at safety. We have about five of them in that game, and we only got exposed once because of them. And if we don't clean those up, we're going to get fractured. And you can't put that stuff on tape.
Kurt, two questions. One with, I think his name is Wetchem, the returner. He's averaging like 35 a kickoff, like 33 for punt return. How big a concern is
yeah,
he?
Yeah, a great returner. Great returner. And they've always done a good job on kickoff return. And he took that first one against Rutgers. He was about 5 yards deep and was really untouched. And he's an excellent punt returner. He's in the 30s on kickoff return and punt return. So we're going to have to do a great job there. Be prepared and give great effort and tackle in space, defeat blocks.
And then I had a follow-up. Just what are you getting from Amari, and what do you need to get from him, Farrell? Amari Farrell?
Yeah, I mean, all three of those guys, we just need them to do what they're supposed to do consistently. You know, prepare a little better. See what's going on, make the proper adjustments, communicate quicker, and be where they're supposed to be. I mean, you can't play Tampa 2 coverage and with a safety that's supposed to be on the right and he's on the left and nobody's on number 2 to the field, you know. And that's not necessarily him, okay. So all three of those guys are older guys. They're all capable of playing great football, and they have in spurts, but we need more consistency.
Kurt, obviously, towards the end of last year, you had some issues going on the road and dealing with the loud environments, with the silent counts. I guess, how much time do you spend in the off season trying to fix those issues, and what did that process look like?
Yeah, well, we went to something different last year in the college football playoff. We didn't use the silent. We really didn't have a problem here. And then in the off season, you spend time on it, and obviously, it'll be a big point of emphasis this week in practice. I'm not going to tell you what we're going to do.
Isaiah Jones having a really strong year. Where have you kind of seen him, you know, evolve from last year to now, and just what's kind of allowed him to play at that higher level more often this year?
Yeah, I think what you're seeing there is just another year of maturity. You know, he was on the team before I got hired, had a back issue, so missed a lot of the season before. Got to play last year quite a bit, and he's just, you know, the natural progression of reps accumulating, bigger, stronger, faster, older, wiser, you know, that kind of thing.
There is Kurt Cignetti giving some of his answer for the game week presser as the Hoosiers will take on Iowa this week. Kirk Ferentz, one of the questions posed to him was Indiana's putting up some pretty gaudy offensive numbers. What are the biggest challenges that they present to your defense? And Kirk says, well, where do you start? It's hard to find a weakness. It really is. I'm not saying it's like playing Ohio State. Bump, 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 bump. Uh-oh. Threw down the gauntlet there. I'm sure that's going to make bulletin board material. I'm not saying it's like playing Ohio State. So he's keeping Indiana in a different class with that statement. But there's some similarities in my mind. If you look at their offense, they have a big physical offensive line, a couple of newcomers that have helped them, yada, yada. So already, I mean, Kirk Ferentz is not one to throw out. I mean, I know he didn't purposely throw that out for bulletin board material, but that could be considered just as such, I would think, right? But they're a big physical offensive line, two tight ends that are very effective, and the one guy that made the big play the other night with that long touchdown, yeah, he did. Then those three receivers as a group, they're all really good individually, but as a group, it kind of takes you back to Ohio State, where pick your poison. There you go. So some pretty good comments there. And Kirk Ferentz is not one. He's pretty black and white. He doesn't throw a lot of fluff out there. And then last year, he says there was a question to him. Coach, you're 0-10 in your last 10 games against ranked teams. What do you have to do differently this weekend? Didn't realize that. Iowa, 0-10 in their last 10 games against ranked teams. Probably score more points than whoever we're playing. That's just about as good as I can do on that one, he said. Yes, it is. Hey, we've got lots more coming up. Dylan Sin will join us from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Glad to have you along. Hope you're having a good day. Guess what? You've made it to the halfway point of the week. It's all downhill from here, baby. Appreciate you being with us on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle back with more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. And as always, glad to have Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette along for the ride as well. He was in Bloomington this past weekend for, don't know what you call it, Dylan. It was a beatdown of epic proportions. The most points ever scored in the history 123 year, whatever it is, I forget. 1896 is when the Big Ten started. The most points ever put up on a top 10 team, period. Indiana continues to set records. Now, they usually set program records, Dylan, but when you blow out a Big Ten record, one that is the history of the conference, now you're talking some big time information there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was remarkable. I've seen some people say that, like, oh, Indiana ran up the score or whatever. Like, I don't really even think that's true, because they took out their starters in the fourth at the end of the third quarter. Alberto Mendoza played the entire fourth quarter. They didn't pass the ball the entire fourth quarter, and they still scored two touchdowns. Like, Illinois couldn't stop the backups any more than they could stop the starters. So he called off. He took his foot off the gas pedal at the start of the fourth quarter, and they still won 63-10. So, just a remarkable day. I continue to be impressed by the atmosphere in that game. At the start of the game, it was better than any of the games last year. Like, and there were some really good atmospheres last year, but I thought it was the best one that I've seen at that stadium. Just filled to the gills before, like, half an hour before kickoff, and stayed that way up until the rain in the fourth quarter, which was kind of disappointing, because, you know, a lot of the fans left. It's 42-10 at the time. It starts pouring down rain. Some people start heading for the exit, or at least the concourse, and you couldn't really kind of soak in the moment in that fourth quarter quite the way you would have liked, just because of some bad luck. But other than that, really, really fantastic day all the way around. Just from the way IU played to the whole game day atmosphere, it really was kind of a showcase of the progress this program has made in basically 18 months.
Absolutely. And I think last year there were still people were confident, but there was still hope and hoping that they're going to win, you know, hoping that they're going to do this, where now it's expectations, which are good and bad, because expectations bring a lot. But yeah, you when you have expectations, the fan base is usually a little stronger, or usually a little wider, and you get what you're getting now. And, you know, when we talk about potential expansion of Memorial Stadium, you have to have these kind of crowds every game to have that need. You have to have a reason to build, to put more seats in there. And this is what does that. So, but congratulations to them as that program continues to build. And as I, you know, I said it all along before the season started, this was a better team. I said, people, this is a better team than it was last year. You just, if you were around it, you knew because of the pieces they had added, the pieces that they kept. And wow, it was, but I would have never, ever imagined it was going to be what we saw. Now, I didn't think Illinois was as good as everybody was bumping them up to be, but my biggest question, I said this yesterday and the day before, I think, was the Indiana's defensive line. I didn't know because they replaced a lot of talent there, man, a lot of big time talent. And so yeah. I was like, I don't really know what they're going to be like because we hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Did we see it then?
And it's hard to get talent on the defensive line in the transfer portal, like especially defensive tackle. It just is. That's just the way college football works. Those guys, by and large, unless they're not entering the portal. Like quality defensive tackles, generally speaking, are not doing it. And so Indiana went and got Jose Wheeler, who was one of the best defensive tackles in the portal. They Tyreek Tucker stepped up. Mario Landino has stepped up. Those three guys are really, really good at what they do. And let's be clear, CJ West and James Carpenter were awesome, and they were fantastic last year. And it was right to question whether they had the defensive line to really hold up against some of the best teams on their schedule. But that was what I was most impressed by. To your point, Jim, that was what I was most impressed by Saturday, was how good that particular group was. I mean, Illinois, there's been a lot of revisionist history about what people thought of Illinois just like less than a week ago. But the basis for the Illinois hype coming into the season was they were able to run the ball really well last year behind an offensive line that was pretty darn good last year. And they returned all five starting offensive linemen from last year. Like, that was the pitch. That's why Illinois was ranked so high at the beginning of the season, was they're experienced up front on offense especially. And Indiana, it was supposed to be like that. That was kind of why before the season I looked at it, I was like, okay, that is a strength for Illinois against what could be a weakness for IU. If there is a weakness for IU, that's it. And Indiana not only won that game, they dominated what was supposed to be a weakness for them against what was supposed to be a strength for Illinois. And that's what I thought was so impressive about it. I mean, they just went through them over and over and over again. Now, part of that was because Illinois was losing. They had to pass. They couldn't run the ball at all. They had to pass. IU could just pin their ears back a little bit. But so much of that was just the front four winning. It wasn't like IU was bringing crazy blitzes from the linebackers to the secondary. It was just the front four winning up front. Landino, I thought, was terrific. Like, he is a guy who we didn't hear of from a ton last year. He was there a few times, but boy, he has really emerged as a playmaker for them in a way that they absolutely needed. And just really, really impressive to not only win that particular matchup, but win it so emphatically. That really was the statement of the night, I thought. It was just as good as it gets. It really was. And to your point about, well, you didn't think Illinois was as good as some people thought, I think that's fair to say. I think we know now that they are not quite as good. I think you could kind of see that, as Chris Nettie said, against Duke, where they were down at halftime against a team that isn't particularly good. And they won because Duke turned the ball over five times in the second half and the score looked lopsided, but Duke was in that game. And so now the question is, it's tongue in cheek, but it's really not, right? Did Indiana win this game by too much? Like, would it have been better had they won this game like 24-13 or something like that? And then you still think that Illinois is pretty good. To me, I think that's a valid question. To me, I think Indiana still needs Illinois to win out. Keep winning the rest of the season. It would be best for Indiana. Now that they've beaten Illinois, Indiana fans need to be Illinois fans, right? Like, this game against USC this week for Illinois is really big for Indiana. I don't think it's going to be good. Yeah,
I agree. USC is just they're similar. They have a very, very potent offense. Now, I'm not saying their defense is quite as good, but no. It doesn't take as great a defense against Illinois because their offensive line, although they have the most starts in college football on their offensive line, they're not good. Have you ever watched Caddyshack? They're not good. They suck. No, just kidding. That's just a great line from Caddyshack. But they gave up all those sacks to Duke. And if Duke hadn't turned the ball over, well, they would have lost that game more than likely. So, you know, a lot of it was built up on the fact of having Luke Altmaier back and having this offensive line with all of this on paper. It looks, sure. But guess what? They don't play the games on paper. So, and here's something that's funny now. I'm 1 week difference. Heisman odds. After week three, John Mateer from Oklahoma, who, if I hear his name one more time, this is almost a candidacy driven by Kirk Herbstreit and ESPN.
He's awesome, and, though. I'm sorry. He's awesome. I watch him play. He's awesome.
I'm not saying he's not, but they have been all over this guy from the beginning, partly because, in my opinion, ESPN carries SEC games.
Sure.
I don't think that they're going to promote, but it's going to get to the point where you can't ignore it. If you go back week one, week two, week three, after week three, I'm surprised. I didn't realize Fernando was up there at week three. I think he was plus 2,500. Now he's plus 650. And he is he's considered the favorite by many people.
Yeah. He's the odds on favorite. If the season ended today, he would be people would vote for him more than likely.
I know a couple of people that put money on him before the season to win the Heisman. Oh, holy moly. As a matter of fact, I know someone who put a nice bet on him that it will pay big. So congratulations to those people. Just like somebody, I saw a guy last year, he bet just $100 on Indiana to make it to the college football playoffs, paid him over $10,000. So, you got to get your bets while you can with Indiana. Last year, the easiest bet in the history of the world was the over and under for games one. To me, it was 5.5. And I'm like, are you kidding me? They're going to start 8-0. I did make a small wager on that. I was dumb because I didn't bet everything I own and anything else that I could borrow from steal from anybody else. That was one of those once in a lifetime gimmies. Gritty has the word of the day. Oh my gosh. Heisman Doza. I'm going to have to send that to the people at IU. There you go. You know, Indiana won't do this, but many teams, because of what it means to have a Heisman Trophy winner, go on little campaigns, later in the season. Oklahoma probably
I wouldn't be so sure that Indiana wouldn't do it. If we get deeper into the season and he's still right up there and he's playing well, I wouldn't be so sure that Indiana wouldn't do it. I think that would fit right in with kind of the way that they've tried to operate the last couple of years. Jeremy Gray out there doing everything he can to promote the program and make it an overall experience. I would not be surprised. Now he's going to have to earn it, right? The next 2 weeks, back to back, they play two of the best secondaries in the country, two of the best defenses in the country, back to back on the road. And so, if Mendoza is actually going to win this thing or have a chance at it late in the season with his play, they're going to have to perform these next 2 weeks. I'm not saying you got to go on the road and beat Oregon, but I am saying you have to beat Iowa this week at Kinnick. I'm saying you have to put up some big numbers against Oregon, even in a loss. And so he's going to have a chance to really show what he can do. Illinois' defense was a little bit down without in the secondary. I'm not saying that they would have won the game or would have been particularly close had those guys played both on the road in two of the more hostile environments in the Big Ten, if not the whole country. And so, it's 63-10 against the number 9 team in the country. This is as good as it gets. This is as good as anyone has ever played in a game against a top 10 team. It's ridiculous. But it really is. We're only at the one-third mark of the season. And there are really big games coming up right now that Indiana needs to play well in. And so if you're Mendoza, this is your moment.
What they just did was unbelievable. And they did it on national TV.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt about that. But you've got to follow that up. You're right. And Iowa is a traditional power. They've been good for as long as since Moby Dick was a minnow. I mean, they were just they're just a solid program. They've had some really good years, but they're always good.
Yeah, I mean, they moved the ball against Rutgers. I think Rutgers has a decent defense, and they moved the ball against them last Friday on the road in Rutgers and won that game without too much fuss down the stretch. I thought Rutgers was the better team going into that game, and Iowa proved me wrong. I think their quarterback is kind of figuring it out as they go here. I think he wasn't entirely healthy at the start of the season. That's just kind of my speculation, but he was hurt in the offseason. There was some rust there, and so I think he's shaking it off. He's not a great thrower of the football. But he's got a decent arm and he can really, really move in terms of like getting hard yards. I compare him a little bit to Riley Leonard from Notre Dame last year, just a guy who's going to get hard yards for you in the quarterback run game. And that's going to open up opportunities for your own running backs. And I think that is going to be something that Indiana is going to have to deal with. And obviously they had a little bit of difficulty with the quarterback run game early in the year. They did not, Altmyer can run for Illinois and he did not in that game against Indiana. So we'll see if Indiana can do that kind of thing again. Everything that we have seen on the football field tells me that Indiana is the better team. And I think they are. That doesn't mean they're going to win on Saturday though. It is going to take a real mental effort to win that game on Saturday. They are going to have to be as mentally sharp as they have ever been to go in and win that game. Because the opportunity and the idea of a letdown, it's just so obvious. It is the obvious place to faceplant. And the old Indiana absolutely would have done that. And this is the new Indiana. Maybe they don't do that, right? Because they're different. And we've seen that for almost a year and a half now that this team is different than the teams that came before it. But this is a game the old Indiana absolutely would have lost. And so we will see what happens this week.
And actually did lose, Dylan, the last time Indiana went to Illinois. I was there for that game, and there was such great expectations with Michael Penix Jr. Coming back from his final injury at Indiana. And it was, you want to talk about the wind going out of the sails right off the bat.
It was 14-0 in 6 minutes. It's 14-0 in 6 minutes.
And you could tell by watching Michael Penix that something wasn't right. And it's like, whoa, wait, he's not the same. Fortunately for Indiana, that's not the case this time, although they are going to face the best defense they have faced probably since playing Notre Dame last fall in the college football playoffs. And another road environment that, you know, they've only lost two games, both of those under Kurt Cignetti. Both of those games have been in big time college football environments at Ohio State, at Notre Dame, but now you're going to another power. So they're going to have to deal with that. They're going to have to deal with the signal calling. They're going to have to deal with getting plays in, changing plays at the line, things of that nature. That has a huge effect on the game.
Yeah, absolutely. It is one of the tougher places to play in college football. I go back to a game that I think of a lot is Michigan went to Iowa 2016. It was Jim Harbaugh's second year. Michigan was 9-0, and they were ranked number two. And they had won some huge games that year. They beat Penn State, I think, 49-7 that year. Penn State ended up winning the Big Ten that season. They just crushed them. And they went to Iowa and played in front of, it was like a blackout crowd for Iowa, like everyone wore black. And Michigan lost that game 14-13 on a last-second field goal after leading 13-11. For most of the fourth quarter. It was the most Iowa result I have ever seen. And I think about that game a lot because that Michigan team was so much more talented than Iowa was. And Iowa just, Kirk Ferentz teams are so, so good at this, that they take more talented teams and they drag them down to your level and they beat you over the head until you submit. And it is, they haven't done that against one of the top teams in the Big Ten in a little bit. They haven't upset a Michigan or a Penn State or an Ohio State since 2017 when they went into Columbus, or when they beat Ohio State like 55-24. That was the last one they really beat one of those upper echelon teams in the Big Ten. So if Indiana really wants to be in that group, it needs to show it in this game. Go in there. Doesn't need to be a blowout. Doesn't need to be two touchdowns. Go in there just businesslike and get out of there with a win and say, hey, we're ready for Oregon. We're ready to go on the road and play one of the five best teams in the country and give them all they want. And so that is the goal this week for IU, is just be businesslike. And that's what they have to do.
Well, one of the things that Indiana has on their side is this unbelievable offense. Again, that it is much better than it was last year. This Indiana is one of the most complete teams in the country. And if people don't believe me, I don't care. They're one of the top five. They're a top five team in the country because they are so complete on both sides of the ball. They're a third in the country in rushing offense at over 300 yards per game, but also on defense. If I could get the rushing defense pulled up there, they're number one overall in allowing, or I may think they're number three in allowing like 86 yards per game. This defensive line is, wow, it's changed things. They were good last year. The defensive line may be better than it was a year ago, and that's not what I expected. I was just wondering, can they be as good?
And that's with Mikhail Kamara not exactly exploding yet, right? Like, he's been good. He's gotten some sacks and some tackles for loss, but he hasn't been quite the superstar he was last year. And they're still wrecking shop up front. Now, part of that is because I think teams are giving a lot of attention to Mikhail Kamara, and so that's giving the defensive tackles some room to make some noise. But they've done this without him being the All-American superstar that he was last year. And so we'll see. And it is one of those things where going into the season, I didn't really see a weakness on this team, except maybe for the defensive line. And right now, I don't see a weakness. If you want to point to a weakness, it's not a talent thing. It is the communication in the secondary, which continues to be kind of an issue. I was seeing it. So the play where they gave up the touchdown against Illinois, it was not that play. It was the play before. Lewis Moore and D'Angelo Pons were kind of they were kind of going back and forth, being like, all right, what is the call here? And you could see them trying to get the call in before the play. And that was not the one they gave up the touchdown on. It was the play before. So there are clear communication issues in this secondary. They got it cleaned up as the game went on, obviously. But it's been a running theme this year, is the secondary has had trouble getting the call in. Is that going to be an issue when it's really loud at Iowa? That would be something that I would be watching out for. If there is a weakness on this team, again, it's not a talent thing. It is, can you get that call into the secondary and not give up a big play as a result? And so we'll have to see if that's something that they're able to fix before they go on the road for the first time. Because if they're having those problems at home, you have to think they're going to be magnified on the road unless they can figure out a way to fix that pretty quickly this week.
Absolutely. Hey, let's take a quick break. Dylan Sin is with us. We're talking college football, Heisman race, all kinds of things fun to do as we're in the middle of the week here at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We're back with plenty more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Glad to have you, and glad to know that you've made it halfway through the week. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette with us. Hey, Mike Gundy out. I'm not surprised, but I'm surprised that they did it now. Why do it now? A guy that has been there that long, the program is, it's the team is obviously, they're not going in the direction they want. That's fine, but nothing's going to change during this season, and you're only giving your players outs already. So I just find that not that he's not going to be paid well. Hell, he's going to get his contract, and he's probably making $1 billion because what I don't understand, Dylan, is why is Oklahoma State having money problems when they've still, even though T. Boone Pickens is no longer with us, I'm pretty sure he left a hefty bag for Oklahoma State. And for those of you who don't know who T. Boone Pickens was, he was just one of the wealthiest people in America, oil man, T. Boone Pickens. Why are they having money problems?
Well, I actually don't think they really are. I think yesterday they had an interview with the athletic director, gave a press conference, and basically he said that they did not, this was this buyout, their, the buyout they owe him is $15 million. And it was all funded from within the athletic department. They did not have to get any outside donor resources to fund that buyout. So they're doing okay, at least from that perspective. What was kind of weird to me is the athletic director does not have a contract currently. He is working as an at-will employee right now. So it's unclear whether he is going to be the one to make the next hire at that school. It's kind of an interesting situation. They're kind of working on a contract extension for him, but it isn't done yet. So we'll have to see there. But in terms of why fire Gundy now, the answer is generally speaking because you want to get an early start on a coaching search, right? The idea is the earlier it's you early. Make the move. Yeah, it is. But they weren't the first one. Virginia Tech and UCLA had already moved. And so
well, UCLA, I understand because that ship, that was the Titanic that was already sinking and on its way to the bottom of the ocean.
Right. But if you're Oklahoma State, you're looking at it like, okay, teams have already moved. If we're looking to interview candidates or talk to people behind the scenes, we need to, if we're going to do this, we need to do it as soon as possible so we can get our name in front of people who are going to be considering this job. And so I think that's probably why you do it. The weirder part to me was why do it on a Tuesday when you played on Friday, you had all day, Saturday, Sunday, and even Monday to do it. And so I don't know why they did that. That's very odd to me, but it is probably in terms of why they did it this early in the season. It's to get to market so you can start a search now, so you can have a list of candidates ready to go when the season ends and you can talk to people, right? I think that's the idea. Now, it was obviously not going to work there. I also don't know where you go next if you're Oklahoma State. They haven't hired a coach in 25 years at this point, basically 22 years, I think it was, he was on that job. And so it's going to be a while. It's going to be a little bit interesting to see where they go with that, because there are guys they could get that have been program guys at Oklahoma State. But do you want to go in inside the family of a coach that just got fired? I don't know. We'll see. But man, that is a college football institution that is no longer there. He was Oklahoma State, and he made a program that up until the 21st century was nothing. They were basically Indiana in the 20th century. And he made them into a contender for not only Big 12 titles, but national titles. They weren't going to win the national title in 2011, but they were a field goal away from going to the national title game, the BCS championship, before they lost to Iowa State. In 2021, they were 6 inches away from going to the 14 playoff. They lost to Baylor in the Big 12 championship game on that crazy play where they needed a touchdown on 4th-and-1 in the final play and got stuffed with the guy trying to go around to the pylon, with one of the craziest plays in college football history. They were right there on the national stage for a good 15 years under Gundy, and that's not nothing at Oklahoma State. That's a really, really impressive resume for him. It just, the last couple of years, they were 3-9, 0-9 in the Big 12 last year. They were clearly terrible this year, probably even worse than last year. And it just wasn't working. And so now you have to, they're going to be in the wilderness probably for at least a couple of years until they can find someone who works there.
Absolutely. And you know, earlier we were talking about the Heisman race, and Fernando Mendoza, currently the betting favorite to win the Heisman. Indiana has never had a Heisman Trophy winner. Anthony Thompson came very, very close in 1989. I think he was robbed of that Heisman, but that is because Indiana missed a chip shot field goal to beat Purdue and ended up with a losing record. And only one player has ever won the Heisman off of a team with a losing record. And that was Paul Hornung from the Golden Boy from Notre Dame way back in 1956. And I truly believe that cost him the Heisman, because what he did was amazing that year, Anthony Thompson. He was on a very average Indiana team, but he stacked these numbers against Michigan, against Ohio State, against Wisconsin, against these big-time teams at the time. And but, again, Indiana never had a Heisman winner. This would be huge. Indiana is already getting a reputation. I talked a bit about this yesterday, Dylan, as Indiana slowly, quietly becoming the new cradle of quarterbacks in college football. Not only do you have Curtis Rourke's, his performance last year in which he led an offense that was prolific, Fernando Mendoza, picked up that mantle and is running harder with it. But at the same time, you've got, which has nothing to do with Cignetti, but the Indiana overall, Brendan Sorsby and Taven Jackson in the top 25 of passing in the country, and Josh Hoover out there, a former Indiana commit as well. So Indiana is going to, and if you get a Heisman Trophy winner out of that offense, guys are going to start clamoring to want that tutelage.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, last year, I think Curtis Rourke would have been in New York for the Heisman ceremony last year had he not gotten hurt in the middle of the season. Not the ACL, which like he had the entire season, but if he had not hurt his thumb and missed a game and a half or two games or whatever it was, I think he probably would have been in New York because he was that good. And if they had not had Drew Evans get hurt and they had performed a little bit better against Ohio State, I think he probably would have been there because he was awesome. Like, we talk about how great Fernando Mendoza is, and he's great, and I think he's probably a better quarterback than Rourke is. But we don't let that diminish what Rourke did last year. He was fantastic.
Rourke reminded me, or I should say, Carson Beck reminds me of Curtis Rourke. Just very dead eyes, no excitement, no emotion, just calm, reading the situation, riding the storm out every time. That's the type of player that I saw Curtis Rourke and see Carson Beck. And Fernando is just a little more, just has a little more lightning in him. He has over the top explosion, which Curtis Rourke didn't have or didn't show. Indiana hasn't shown that yet. They haven't had to, but that's coming. I think that they're saving that for when they have to use it, maybe against Oregon. And think about that. We're going to have maybe the two top favorites at the time for the Heisman Trophy play each other in a little over 2 weeks from now. As Indiana goes to Iowa this week, they have a bye. Then they travel to Oregon, where they will play against Dante Moore, who is also one of the top favorites to win the Heisman Trophy this year. And he currently has just under 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns, one interception, and throwing at about a 75% completion rate, where Fernando is he's right at 1,000 yards, 14 touchdowns, which leads everybody, nation, Big Ten, zero INTs, and nearly a 77% completion rate. And just think that when he gets to teams like Michigan State, UCLA, Maryland, Wisconsin, I mean, he could really stack up some numbers. Plus that he's only played 5 quarters in his last 2 games.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. He's put up those enormous numbers while sitting out a lot of those last couple of games here. He sat out the entire fourth quarter, most of the fourth quarter against Kennesaw State, basically the entire second half against Indiana State, and then the entire fourth quarter against Illinois. So, yeah, really impressive. On Dante Moore, it's interesting because Oregon plays Penn State this week. That is the game of the week. It is two of the best teams in the country, maybe the two best teams in the country. And so if Oregon wins that game, there's a decent chance that no matter what Fernando does against Iowa, that Dante Moore, especially if he plays well, moves past him in the Heisman standings. And so Fernando would then have to go into Oregon and play well, and have an opportunity to really impress people. But yeah, again, got to get Iowa first. And that's going to be, that alone, just the mystique of Iowa, especially on defense, if you play well against them, that is going to be something that matters to people when it comes to voting at the end of the year. And so we'll have to see. That is, it's going to be, like I said, back-to-back chances for him to really show what he's got here on really big stages after doing what he needed to do and then some against Illinois. Absolutely.
Well, he showed that the stage was not too big, man, and that was huge because I think that going to Iowa before Oregon is going to be of great benefit to Indiana. I think that they win the game at Iowa. I think it's probably a little closer than people expect after what happened last weekend, but I think that this helps Indiana as they prepare to go to Oregon, because the crowd at Iowa is going to be fantastic. Playing at Oregon in Eugene is no easy task.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure how many Big Ten fans have been out there or know this, but it is one of the best atmospheres in college football. Like, it's not like Oregon has this kind of reputation, kind of still a holdover from the early 2010s, is this new money program that has just kind of bought its way to the top of college football. But let's be clear about one thing. Those fans care, and they pack that place, and it is loud, and it is extremely difficult to play there. Ask Ohio State about that. They went up there last year, Ohio State, that won the national championship and destroyed Oregon later in the year in the Rose Bowl, and they lost that game in Austin because it was close and they played well, but that crowd was electric in that game. So it's a really, really tough home environment, and it'll be a really interesting test for Indiana, especially the rebuilt lines, because Oregon's been really good up front this year. So again, Iowa first, and then you get the bye, and then you get Oregon. It kind of, we're starting to see it sets up pretty well, just like last year where the schedule built, right? You went from one challenge to the next, to the next, to the next, and it took a step up. And I think that's what Indiana is doing this year. I think Iowa is a step up from Illinois in terms of the level of challenge, because you're going on the road, and then Oregon is obviously going to be another step up from that, and you're coming off a bye with a chance to do that. So the schedule is setting up the same kind of way where you are going to be able to challenge yourself more and more as the season goes on until you get to the end of the year. So everything is right in front of Indiana, but they got to go take it this weekend at Iowa to start off with.
Absolutely. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, always fun to have you along, brother.
Absolutely, Jim. Thanks for having me on, as always.
We'll see you. Where are you going this weekend, by the way?
So I'm not going anywhere this weekend. I'm going to be at home. I will be following the games. It's been kind of a basketball week for me. I'll be in West Lafayette today, first Purdue practice of the year for basketball. So I will be there today. Looking forward to that.
Cool. Did you see we have another open IU basketball practice coming?
I did. I'll be in Bloomington next week for that. Really looking forward to that as well. Should be a lot of fun.
You're welcome. Everybody's welcome. I'm going to keep taking credit for it, baby. Hey, appreciate you, my friend.
Absolutely, Jim. Thanks as always.
You bet. Hey, Dylan Sin joining us from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. More coming up. Kyle Nedrup, the Indy Star. High school football heading into week 6. They're on the backside of their schedules. Crazy. Back with more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along, and Kyle Nedrup from the Indy Star, as well as the high school season in week 6, man. They are on the backside of their schedule, Kyle, and we'll get to that in a second. My Reds, they have the chance to steal this last playoff spot, and they just can't stand prosperity as they lose to the lowly Pirates last night, and they let the Mets get a squeaker over the Cubs, who are giving the Reds no help because the Cubs are already in the playoffs. So my Reds are fighting, but your Tigers are also hanging on for dear life as the Guardians are all over them.
I have pulled the plug, and I listen, throughout the season, I've got the app where I can listen to all the games, and I love Dan Dickerson, who does the games on the radio. And so if I'm out walking or driving or whatever, I'll always, even if I'm at home, I'll listen to the games. I have pulled the plug the last week because I sense the inevitable coming. They can't beat Cleveland. I mean, they just can't. So, it is what it is. It was a good season up to a certain point, and now I can't even deal with it anymore.
Hey, we're in week 6 of the high school season, man, and the state of Indiana football is great right now. Of course, Indiana is having another spectacular season, offensive explosion. The Colts are shocking everybody with this 3-0 start and looking to go 4-0. Note, you've got Notre Dame, who's not really having a great season. Purdue is greatly improved, and then we've got all the high school games that are going on, and that has been produced some pretty good games so far. And it seems like it's a more level playing field this year.
Yeah, man, you're right. I mean, the excitement over the Colts and IU is just pretty incredible. It's awesome for our state that that's happening. And Colts very unexpected. I think maybe IU a little bit more expected, but it kind of filters down to the high school level, and it's a cool thing. I mean, for football, just generally in the state. And I was actually out at Brownsburg Friday, and I mean the crowd and the total, just the total overhaul. And not that it was a bad program, but you know, if you were there 10 years ago and then look at it now, the crowd and the facilities. And you know, John Hart after the game is like, you know, we feel like we're Texas football in Indiana. And it's like, I don't think that's too far off base. I mean, it's really impressive what they're doing there. And the talent on the field, obviously, too, it has to matter or has to be part of that. And they are the real deal. 5-0 so far this year. I watched them in person for the first time, beat Fishers last, you know, Friday, 42-14. And that was a Fisher's team I covered the previous week was really good against HSE and put up a lot of points in that game, especially early. So very impressive. They go to Westfield this week. Brownsburg does. So that'll be another really good test on the road. And Westfield obviously has done a great job in their own right of building their program and all the facilities and the talent that they have there as well. But yeah, it's the top level of high school football is very, very good. You know, you could even, you know, in another class, New Pal, and they're off to the 5-0 start. And, you know, arguably, you know, you could say maybe they're the second best team in the state. I mean, really behind Brownsburg at this point. So they just don't play, you know, they're not as big of a school. You know, they're probably half the size, but also very, very good this year. So, yeah, it's interesting, you know, how this will all shake out. I mean, I think Brownsburg will be tested. They already were by Avon. I'm not saying they're invincible, but in person, they were really, really good. They can run, they can throw. Their defense is very good. So they're going to be tough to beat, I think. And Westfield, I think, will give them a very good game this weekend. But, you know, they're definitely a favorite, I think, to defend their title.
Has there been any surprises at the top in Class 6A this year?
I wouldn't say at the topness, you know. It's some of the same name. I say Carmel maybe, just because of where they were last year. They've already surpassed their win total of a year ago. But I think anybody who knows Kevin Wright probably knew that they were poised for a big turnaround. And you know, the talent that they had, even from last year's roster, was pretty high. So I would say they're maybe a little bit of a surprise. You know, they're ranked fourth right now. They play North Central, but then they have, you know, and then Ben Davis next week, and then they have Warren in week 8. So that'll be a real game to watch, because Warren's been playing really well too. So, but yeah, I would say probably them. I mean, if you look down the, you know, the top 10 this week, Avon might be, you know, they're ranked 10th. I mean, they're probably a little bit of a surprise to, if you didn't know any better, but you know, people knew they were sort of on the rise anyway. And then Penn, you know, I'm curious to see if Penn is for real. You know, they're ranked 6th, they're 5-0. They don't, you know, these 6A teams up north, they don't play kind of the same schedule just because of where they are. I'm not saying it's their fault, just geography-wise, they play a lot of 5A and 4A teams. So you don't have a true sense of maybe where they are compared to our teams down here. So, you know, teams like Penn and Crown Point, you do wonder how good they really are. I mean, again, not discrediting them, you just don't have any comparison to them. So that's probably it. I mean, most of the teams we expected to be good, you know, Brownsburg, Center Grove, Crown Point, certainly Westfield, Lawrence North, I mean, they're 4-1 and playing really well. Some of the teams we expected to be good are still very good.
This weekend, week 6, man, it's as it always does, everything just flies by. But 4 weeks from the playoffs, man, that's, or I guess the 5 weeks really, but to say that is crazy, because it seemed like it was yesterday. It was 5 weeks until the beginning of the season.
Yeah. There's always, you always have a lot of plans of, you know, plans get a lot of stuff you get done, then you're excited for the game to start, and then that part seems to fly by so fast. But yeah, we'll be getting into I'm going to have a mid-season report here coming out probably tomorrow, just on kind of things we've learned so far, taking a look at you know, some of the better players and whatnot. But But yeah, man, it's, you know, we get into this part of the year and then you're kind of thinking about already about the sectional draw, which isn't, which I guess still a couple weeks off, but all not all that far down the road. So, yeah, things start happening pretty fast now.
What individuals have stood out that either wasn't expected or was, and they are more than living up to their billing?
Well, there's a kid up at Knox, Indiana, named Miles McLaughlin, who, you know, and he's not a surprise to anybody up there, but you know, he's leading the nation in rushing, has a chance to break the all-time rushing record of Charlie Spiegel, which is pretty amazing considering that record is almost 11,000 yards rushing for his career. He's a kid who I think people may not, he's not like a top recruit. He's going to probably go to, he's got some Division I interest, not like he's a five-star prospect or something, but he's a kid who's very important to his team. They're 5-0 and they're ranked highly in class 3A. He actually plays quarterback, believe it or not, but they run kind of a zone read option that, he sort of, plays quarterback on, and he's not necessarily a quarterback, but he's kind of a running back playing quarterback. So he's definitely a guy that, is maybe a little bit off the radar for certain people down here who may not know who he is, but we'll have something on him coming up here not too long, but he's definitely a guy. It's kind of a fun story and a guy to watch, I think, throughout the rest of the season for sure, and see if he can break that record. There's been, I'd say some of the players around here, Isaiah Moore from Lawrence North, the running back, junior. So he's not up for Mr. Football or anything, but he's a guy that's really fun to watch. He's kind of a Barry Sanders type of, not saying he's that level, but type of same style, make you miss and have you turned around and then fallen over before you know it, type of guy. There's been, I think, you look at the Brownsburg team, Brandon Sharp at receiver and Oscar Fry at quarterback. Those guys have been really good. Gage Sturgill from that Fishers team has been really good as a quarterback. There's just Jack Sorge at Tri-West, who's going to Louisville. He's been outstanding so far this year. So, those are some of you, a lot of players. I'm going to have more on all that online tomorrow, but there's a lot of guys who are having good seasons.
And something that Indiana's Fernando Mendoza is now the betting odds favorite to win the Heisman. Long way to go in the college football season. We're only have completed 4 weeks so far, but he's going to be up there all year long, barring injury. And what would it mean to have a Heisman Trophy winner, not just from Indiana, but from a team in the state of Indiana, but specifically from Indiana? They've never had one.
Yeah, I mean, that would be incredible. And who would have thought, right? I mean, I think we all knew he's a good quarterback, but to be in that sort of stratosphere is something else entirely. But just the whole, I know there were some in-state recruits at that game Saturday, and I mean, just being there for that has to be such a boost of, it's like nothing we've ever seen before, just from a standpoint of the atmosphere, the game itself, kind of this ride they're on the last couple of years as a total, has to be impressive. But again, a lot of this will come down to, for recruits anyway, it's a lot of it's NIL, a lot of it's, fit and the other options that you have. Some of these kids are going to have really good options also that they have to consider as well. I think it just kind of adds to the, if he does win the Heisman, obviously that's a huge thing just for your program. That's something you put on display for everyone to see when they come into your building and you make that kind of your, hey, we're producing Heisman Trophy winners. What else can you say to, not much else you can say to that when you're recruiting somebody, let alone the making the playoff last year and probably again, I think they're going to make it this year. So, I mean, you just have to pile all that together and, I don't know if he'll win the Heisman, but even if you can get invited even to New York, that's something in itself as well. You can kind of build on for a couple weeks of more momentum. So, Yeah, I think good times are ahead for IU football. I don't see this slowing down. I think they'll be, you know, when you look at that team Saturday, I'm not saying every game's the same matchup. You know, it felt like Illinois kind of just wasn't ready for that, but a lot of that has to do with what IU's doing. I don't see this really slowing down. I think they're going to be exceptional all year.
Absolutely, and I agree with that. Last year they had Curtis Rourke, who was just almost as good, but being able to play in this type of environment, Indiana doesn't produce the most college talent, but they produce enough. And like Warren Central, for God's sakes, are sending four guys to D1 off that line last year. But I think it looks like Indiana could potentially become the Purdue used to be known as the cradle of quarterbacks, but Indiana is inching closer and closer to that. I mentioned earlier that not only of their current quarterbacks last year's and this year, what they're doing right now, Taven Jackson, who's from Cedar Grove, is also in the top 25 in passing. Brendan Sorsby, I don't remember where he is originally from, but also a former IU quarterback in the top 25 in passing. And Josh Hoover, a former IU commit from Texas, who's the starting quarterback at TCU. So it's crazy the connection Indiana has to so many NCAA quarterbacks right now.
Yeah, definitely, man. And I think with the quarterbacks, probably more than any position, and I think IU will continue to look in the portal like a lot of teams do, because you want guys who kind of have proven it if you can get them. But you also want to develop quarterbacks. And I think quarterbacks, more than any position, you're kind of looking at, you know, how do they use their quarterbacks? And when you're going through the recruiting process, like, how does that look for my skill set? What other quarterbacks they have on their roster? You know, that sort of thing. So I think proof of concept for IU right now in recruiting, it's like, man, I mean, you couldn't ask for any more of your quarterbacks and what they're doing these last couple of years with two different guys. I mean, it's not just one. You know, it's not just one guy. It's two different players who are producing at a super high level. So I think the proof of concept there for IU football with the quarterback position is you couldn't get any higher right now. So, you know, I don't know who those guys are going to be coming up as far as in-state players. We have a lot of good quarterbacks that, you know, it's just hard. That position is so hard. You know, it's just you only have basically one guy who can play. And then, you want a quality backup, but then, you know, a lot of these guys, they don't want to go be third string. I mean, that's just kind of the reality. And sometimes they're not going to recruit them anyway, because we already have a recruit in that class or whatnot. So some of these guys may have to start out at a MAC school, and maybe you work your way up to transfer to IU in some cases. So that's kind of where it's at now. And there are a lot of good quarterbacks out there who are going to end up going to MAC schools or even below that to the FCS or Division II, and you kind of have to prove yourself and go from there. But that's, you know, I hate to say that, but that's just kind of the way it is now.
Absolutely. Kyle Nedenbrip from the Indy Star, the guru of high school sports for the Star. If you need to know what's going on, you just follow his coverage and you will have it, including all the great games coming up and stories as well. Appreciate you, my friend.
You bet. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Kyle Nedenbrip here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio with a Tigers fan. Next up, Mets fan and sports all around concierge, K-Bro, Kevin Brockway joins us. Cannot wait. Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, here on this Wednesday. And as always, a special treat. K-Bro stops by before we get into having fun with K-Bro. A little sad news, K-Bro. Nancy Leonard, who was the widow of Bob Slick Leonard, the matriarch, considered the matriarch of the Indiana Pacers, passed away last night at the age of 93. But she was a force and a huge reason why the Pacers are still in Indianapolis, K-Bro. They had, a telethon on TV. Who does that for a pro team? And she was right there leading the band like no other. And, of course, married to Bob Slick Leonard, who was his own character. So one final boom, baby, for the Leonard family. As just an incredible story, to be honest with you, of how that franchise, you know, was able to stay in existence, Kevin.
Yeah, and you know, it's synonymous with Indiana basketball. I mean, that's what was so great about my 3.5 years there, was learning about the tradition and the history and everything. And of course, you remember when we went to Hoosier Gym in Knightstown. That was a lot of fun. And never made it to the Basketball Hall of Fame in Newcastle. But you know,
you know what? I haven't either. I've been to Newcastle for games to cover them and call them. But I have not made it to the Hall of Fame. Maybe one day when you come back, we can do that. Me and Cabro had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Cabro, this weekend, the road trip to Iowa. Remember that one?
How about that? Stadium. Yeah, I was going to say, Kurt,
we had the dark passenger along with us.
Yeah. I was going to say, Kurt Cignetti is, you know, turning Indiana into a football state as we speak. You know, this is pretty amazing. What they did to Illinois was fairly impressive, and he is showing that this is not a one-hit wonder, that this program you know, has a chance to be sustainable for a while under his watch.
Absolutely, no doubt about that. And yeah, we one of our last road trips was out to Iowa, and that was a few years ago when Indiana had, boy, they had a lot of expectations then, and whoo. That balloon got popped right off the bat, but that was a completely different situation. Indiana going into Iowa as a favorite this time. And not only that, with the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman right now, okay, bro? How it's funny how things change in just a week.
Yes, Fernando Mendoza, right? The Maxwell Award winner, or Maxwell Award player of the week, I saw, who was quite impressive in that game. And yeah, it's like I said, you know, it's amazing to think, you know, our buddy Michael Penix, by the way, had a rough week getting shut out by Carolina. But, you know, Tom Allen had that 2-year window, but he couldn't quite sustain it, you know, 2019, 2020. I think Kurt Cignetti looks like he's built a foundation that's a little more solid. We will see. But, you know, it certainly looks like that this is something that's going to be sustainable from year to year.
Well, not only that, Kurt Cignetti is actually running everything. And, well, I shouldn't say running everything. He is extremely offensive inclined. This is his offense. I mean, there are guys that are the offensive coordinator, but everything is done under his plan, his program. Now, I'd say he pretty much leaves the defense to Bryant Haynes because he's one of the best defensive coaches in the country. And you can do that, and they have successfully done that. But he always knows what's going on. He understands the game plans, and I think that's the difference. I loved Tom Allen, but Tom was just offensively challenged. He did not, you know, really know what to do in certain situations, and was very conservative because of that. They just didn't have what they have right now. Indiana is a juggernaut. They're a machine that you hope to not get eaten up. Now, Iowa's a tough place to play. It doesn't matter. And it's going to be a tighter game than I think fans understand, although I think Indiana wins this game. I think they win by 2 touchdowns. But it's probably going to be a game that lasts into the fourth quarter of, you know, not being secured.
Yeah, and listen, I think, you know, whatever Kurt is doing up there is working, unlike down here where things are not working in Gainesville. And there's a lot of we are on the watch here for Billy Napier. And it's been pretty interesting when you look at the cycle and the number of coaches that have already been fired, right? Brett Pry, Mike Gundy yesterday got the axe, Deshaun Foster out at UCLA, right? Stanford's coach. So, you know, there are going to be 4 job openings. I think there are going to be a lot more. And I know that Indiana has taken care of, you know, Kurt Cignetti financially. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens when the market opens at the end of the year. And, you know, Scott Dolson might have to, you know, shell out a little more to
keep. I don't know, man. He's up there at the $10 million mark, bro. That's about as high as I'm not saying someone couldn't pay a little more. I don't know that Kurt Cignetti, he went from making $600,000 to $10 million. I don't think he's going to care about another $2 million a year, if I'm being honest. I think he loves that he has done it where he's done it. I said this a year ago before they signed that big contract. I think he loves doing what he's doing, where he's doing it, because it couldn't be done. It hadn't been done, and there's no way it could be done. Not only is he doing it, he is shoving it, and he wants to make Indiana a power known like Ohio State and Penn State and Oregon and Georgia and anybody else, and I think he will stay and do that.
It's going to be fascinating, you know, the Big Ten, when you look at it, and I mean, you look at this is supposed to be Penn State's year, right, with James Franklin, and then you've got, you know, certainly Ohio State beating Texas early in the year. So I think Indiana's up there with those heavyweights. Can they finish it off, and can they get to the Big Ten title game in Indianapolis, and can they win it all? And that would be really a huge feather, you know, certainly in Kurt Cignetti's camp, something that hasn't been done since what, John Pont in the 1960s. So.
Yeah. Another issue that I love to talk about is the fact that the Big Ten has been the leader for a long time, playing 9 games. They were the first to do it. The SEC lagged and lagged and lagged, and finally were cajoled, forced into doing this, basically. Well, now not only have they done it, though, they're saying, okay, I'm going to see your 9 games, and I'm going to add a Power 10 requirement for our teams as well. The ACC trying to keep up. They're like doing a hodgepodge of 9 games with some teams, but all of their teams are playing 10 Power 4 teams throughout the next couple of seasons. The Big 12 is gone to that as well. The Big 10 now has to respond to me and say, okay, we're going to require a P4 requirement as well. And I don't think they can wait much longer. All these other conferences are doing this next year. This will impact the CFP selection committee.
Yeah, you know what would be really fun to see, and I don't think it can happen, though, because of all the scheduling agreements in advance, but it would be fun to see like an SEC Big Ten crossover, like a classic, like, you know, early in the season where you have those two teams and you kind of pair it up by records. You could have Indiana playing Alabama, for example. You could have Ohio State playing Georgia, you know, early in the year, you know, and that would be certainly a lot of fun. But, maybe we'll see it in the postseason, you know, depending on how the CFP plays out in terms of those, Big Ten SEC matchups. And, frankly, the Big Ten, I believe, got the better of them last year, certainly. And when you look at what Ohio State did to Tennessee, and then obviously, Notre Dame beating Georgia was more of an independent there, but it was a rough one for the SEC last year. And I think this year, you know, the conference, you know, might be a little stronger, but I really think it's been a little bit of a down cycle. SEC fans don't want to admit it or say it, but they have not been as dominant as they were from, like, say, 2010 to 2022. I think the last couple of years, the conference, you're looking at some of the non-conference results too, you know, obviously Texas losing to Ohio State as one of those examples. You look at what Miami did to Florida, the other day. That's an ACC. You look at what Florida State did to Alabama. The league is not as dominant as it was. I mean, it's still a very strong league. It's still a very physical league. It's still a very deep league, but I wouldn't say that the SEC is what it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. And that's not a very popular opinion, but if I were on Paul Feinbaum, I would say the same thing.
And I agree with you. I think that the Big Ten is the absolute strongest conference at the top, with Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State. I think that they're better than any SEC team right now. LSU is the highest ranked SEC team, but I don't think they're the best in the SEC. Georgia might be. They're a very, very good team, obviously. But Oklahoma, I'm not sure. Well, not only that, they just lost their quarterback for several games. So that is going to really hurt Oklahoma.
Are you going by AP or coaches?
This is AP poll. I should pull up the coaches poll.
Coaches, I think, has Georgia ahead of LSU. But, yeah, Georgia and LSU are probably the cream of the crop. But, you know, I watched LSU head-to-head against Florida, and LSU's got a nice defense this year, and they've really made a lot of improvements in the portal in that area. But offensively, under Nussmeier, I'm not incredibly impressed. And they don't run the ball very well either. And, you know, Brian Kelly got a little testy when he was asked about the offense early in the season. And I think Nussmeier was going through a little bit of an injury issue and so forth and everything. And maybe it's impacting his performance a little bit. He was kind of limited in reps during the offseason. But, yeah, LSU, I would say. But, you know, Georgia, Gunnar Stockton has turned out to be much better than I thought he was going to be. And I would say Georgia is still the team in this league. And Arch Manning has obviously flopped a little bit. Texas does have a salty defense as well. There are a lot of good defensive teams in the SEC.
But they are so overranked. It's ridiculous that Texas is number 7. I find that utterly ridiculous because they have not done anything. And I think it's based on half of that is Arch Manning and maybe the defense, but you have
They did play Ohio State to the wire. It wasn't like they were blown out in that game, and they went to Columbus. It wasn't, you know,
yeah. It's the first game of the year. Nobody looked great, but I just think Texas is so overrated. There were many teams. Illinois was overrated.
Texas comes to Florida after the bye week, so we'll see there.
Yeah, like, but Florida's been suffering, like you said.
Yeah, but if Texas loses to a bad Florida team, then we can say Texas is overrated. I think, you know. If Texas goes out, beats them by 2 or 3 touchdowns, then yeah, they're probably worthy of being a top 10 team.
Coming up this weekend in the SEC, you've got Notre Dame versus Arkansas, a huge game for both of those teams.
Amazing.
I mean, Notre Dame, if they lose that game, they're gone. They are gone from the CFP. Arkansas, after a couple of losses already, or just one loss. I can't remember. I know they lost at Ole Miss in a tight game. Notre Dame's just a 3.5-point favorite than that one. But Vanderbilt's got an easy game with Utah State. Ole Miss and LSU. There we go. There's a test right there. My daughter's Rebels. She'll be at that game as Brian Kelly comes in. That should be a fun game to watch.
That's good. You know, and Lane has got it going. And it's amazing, you know, how – you know, Florida has DJ Lagway, who's, you know, was one of the best high school recruits in the 2023 class. And Billy Napier doesn't know what to do with him. And look, DJ's been a little banged up and stuff. But Lane Kiffin can take a guy from Ferris State and turn him into a star. It just tells you, man, coach and play calling, like how important it is to have the right guy in control. Like you guys have a Kurt Cignetti, too. It's amazing when you look at that and how much at the college level coaching and scheming and coming up with good game plans really matters because, you know, there are certain coaches that you can throw anyone in there, a quarterback, and they're going to be successful based on as long as they run the system that's devised by the schemer and the play caller.
I'm surprised that Indiana is just 12th in the coaches poll. Still, I've said all along that they are from the beginning of the season, they are being so undervalued and it's still yet to, I think that they're right now they're better than Oklahoma right now, especially since they've lost their quarterback. And it shouldn't be that way, but unfortunately it is. They might be better than LSU. We'll certainly find out because we've got some great games this weekend.
I think Indiana football at this point suffers a lot of what Florida basketball suffers. And, you know, you could call those two programs a Rodney Dangerfield of their respective programs because Florida basketball is overshadowed by Florida football and Indiana football is overshadowed by Indiana basketball, by the brand, the overall brand of it and the overall fan passion. And I think that stilts a lot of perceptions of both programs that are obviously, nouveau striving for excellence. And Kurt Cignetti has done an incredible job with, you know, Indiana football, just as Todd Golden has done an incredible job with Florida basketball. But at the same time, it's like because you don't have that, national fan passion or national tradition or history in both programs, they kind of get, swept under in the perception game.
Who's the best team in the SEC in your opinion?
In football or basketball?
Football.
No, I told you, I think Georgia is probably the best team right now. Yeah, I would say Georgia. I mean, God, Ole Miss is going to be interesting when they play LSU. That's going to be an interesting game because Lane might have a team this year. Oh, look, Tennessee's up there. I mean, Tennessee played Georgia the wire, and Aguiar has been pretty good.
Yes, he has looked very good.
So, I mean, I would say that, you know, I wouldn't sleep on Tennessee either to make a little noise again this year, and Heupel has done a tremendous job with that program. But, I just think that, you know, Kirby Smart, until otherwise proven, is the SEC champion, and they're complete in all areas. And I really thought that they were going to be vulnerable this year with the quarterback play, but I couldn't have been more wrong because Gunnar Stockton has turned out to be pretty good.
Boy, Alabama, they've got to get it going on. They've got a tough, tough match this weekend as they will travel to Georgia. Our buddy Kalen DeBoer, he doesn't want a 2-2 start, man. What's next for you?
I think that's one game that kind of hurt the Big Ten a little bit, is how much Alabama thumped Wisconsin. But I don't know what's going on up there with Luke Fickell, though. It doesn't seem like that they're, you know, which is surprising because Luke Fickell took Cincinnati to college football
playoff. Well, for one thing, he lost his quarterback. His starting quarterback went down in the first game, and they've been having to go with a backup quarterback who is not great. It's not getting the job done. So that has really hindered their growth. Injuries have hurt them. But what's up next for you, brother?
What's up next for me is I'm going to watch the Mets tonight, and hopefully they can take care of the Cubs again and have a comeback like they did last night, or hopefully they can make it a little easier and get out to a lead. But
how's the song go?
Meet the Mets, hot dogs, green grass, all at it, Shay. Guaranteed to have a heck of a day because the Mets are really hitting the ball. Na-na-na-na, over the wall. But, the Reds, I mean, listen, you know, and the D-backs too. It's going to be an amazing finish, right?
Well, the Reds just swept the Cubs in a four-game series, but the Cubs have already made the playoffs. They're not working that hard. So now the Mets get to go after the Cubs. Then they finish with Miami, I think, or Florida, whatever.
The Mets go down to Miami, and Miami's playing really well right now.
Well, that could be the difference. But then Chicago.
The Reds got the Brewers. Then
he has to go to the Brewers, which, again, have made the playoffs. So we'll sure see, buddy. We'll see who gets to wear their hats next time.
All right, buddy. It's good catch up. But, yeah, it's the open week. I've been told by my editors you can't call it the bye week. It's the open week. A bye is in a tournament. So
that's true.
It's the open week. And then Florida plays Texas. And we're obviously on Billy Napier watch up here because it's really going south, unfortunately. But you know, basketball started practice. I had a nice story about Tommy Houck, and they're moving him to the wing, which is interesting. And I guess Darren DeVries, it'll be interesting to see what he's got up his sleeve in terms of, getting the Hoosiers back to, postseason in the NCAA tournament where they belong, right?
Yep, I've got just about 30 seconds left, but Indiana has become, I posted, a much more open program under Darren DeVries. I chatted him up at Huber's earlier this year and asked him about the possibility of, hey, man, it'd be great if you could have an open practice for the media. And, he said, I'll work on that, and I thought he was just, in one ear out the other. He did that already. Now they're doing it a second time, which is amazing. So it's a much more open area. I think that is carrying over to recruits. He just landed Chase Branham. So things are going very, very well. And look forward to talking up some basketball with you as the season gets closer and closer.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, we've got a national championship basketball program down here and a football program that's floundering.
Brother, we appreciate you, and the fans love you. Can't do without you. See you again on the other side. Make sure you're giving K-Bro a follow at Kevin Brockway G1 at Twitter, and all of his comments and content down for the paper? Gainesville Sun?
The Gainesville Sun and Gannett Network. I'm all over the state, baby. All over the country.
He's everywhere. He's omnipresent. Back with Zach Browning from the Hoosier.com. Appreciate you, K-Bro.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you, buddy.
All right, brother. We have got more coming up. As I said, Zach Browning joins us from the Hoosier.com after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. You've made it to the halfway point. Zach Browning from the Hoosier.com joins us now. And for those of you out there, you should be going to the Hoosier.com. Get yourself a subscription. It is without a doubt the most informative site on the planet for Indiana news. Recruiting, every recruiting story is being broken by On3 now. Just go there, and it's only a buck to check it out. And then 50% off, and you get a free subscription to The Athletic on top of that. So what more could you want? In addition to all the local coverage from greats like Zach Browning and Alec Lasley and Kyler Staley on the basketball side, and the national writers as well, Joe Tipton and Ari Wasserman, and we just had Steve Wiltfong on yesterday. Zach, we're going to talk football, but before we do, I haven't talked a lot about the fact that Indiana just landed a major basketball recruit in Chase Branham. That's huge because he's in the 2027 class, right?
Yeah, Branham, a 2027 guard, top 40, top 50, top 40 guard, depending on which outlet you're looking at.
That's huge to get it that far in advance for someone that is far. And but you could just tell he put out a video of when he told the coach and there at the Simon Scott Assembly Hall, and it just looked like he was already a part of that team. And I just mentioned with Cabro a minute ago how much open this program has become under Darren DeVries. You know, I asked him about that open practice at Huber's. He did it. He was a man of his word. But not only did he do that, he's doing it again. And this is not something different from other programs, but it is the complete opposite of what it has been like at Indiana for years and years and years. And we're seeing the event on Kirkwood Avenue. Then they're having the open scrimmage for the fans as well. I mean, they are really, really opening themselves up to Hoosier Nation.
Yeah, and it's exactly what you want to see if you're an IU fan. You want to see your head coach. You want to see your coaching staff. You want to see the basketball program be transparent, and you want to see the head coach and the staff work hard. And the commitment of Chase Branham is an example of Darren DeVries going above and beyond to get it done on the recruiting trail. I mean, he saw, out of every head coach that was in to see Chase Branham this summer, whether it was Ben McCollum at Iowa, who it really came down to Iowa versus Indiana in this one. So this is a win for Darren DeVries over new Iowa head coach Ben McCollum. But Darren DeVries was always there. He was going out to Iowa, even on busy weekends on the Nike and Adidas circuits. DeVries, or at least Drew Adams, somebody on the Indiana staff, always made it a point of emphasis to find their way out to wherever Branham was playing on the Under Armour circuit to go out there and watch him and meet with him. And I think that's really what kind of sold Branham on IU. It was back at his first visit. He visited over the summer, an unofficial visit over the summer, and he told On3 when he committed that he really kind of knew back after that first visit because of just how close the players, the staff, he said it felt like home. And that's exactly what you want if you're an Indiana fan looking at Darren DeVries coming in and trying to build a new and lead Indiana into a new era here in Bloomington. That's exactly what you want to hear. And this is not only a win for Darren DeVries on the recruiting trail to land somebody in the 2027 class, land a top 50 recruit, a top 15 guard in the 2027 class, but this is a win against Ben McCollum and Iowa right out of Ben McCollum's backyard out there in Iowa. So it's a big win on the recruiting trail for multiple different reasons to land Branham.
Absolutely. And it just shows that I think Indiana fans should not worry about how recruiting is going to go. Again, in this day and age, getting a kid that is that, you know, a class ahead is very shocking because they're usually waiting to see what's the best deal I can get and what's going to come along next. And so pretty impressive. It also, to me, says a lot about the individual that they are kind of locked into what they want, where they want to go, what they want to do, not really flippy floppy. Of course, that's all that's as long as he doesn't change his mind about anything between now and then.
But yeah, it's also, and we see it on the football side right now too, having a commitment early in that future class, in that 2027 class, helps kind of the snowball effect. They can then begin to help recruit with the coaching staff. We've seen it on the football side with Jamison Purcell, the quarterback commit for Indiana. He was here this past weekend for the Illinois game, helping recruit and helping kind of Indiana assess their 2027 targets on the football side. Branham's now going to be able to do that with Indiana basketball on the basketball side. You know, Indiana can point to and Branham can talk, because as much as Darren DeVries is relatable to these younger guys, and as much as Kenny Johnson, Rod Clark, Drew Adams, as much as these assistants can relate and have been able to establish strong connections with a lot of these high school recruits in a short amount of time, the best way to establish a connection with a recruit is to have a kid that's his age talk to him and have him explain why Indiana would be a great fit and why they should team up in Bloomington. So I think having Branham, or even on the football side, having a guy like Purcell is big to kind of peer recruit in that sense, because it matters more than you would expect. It's not just the head coach. It's not just the assistants that are recruiting these days. These guys all know each other in the age of social media. These guys have played with each other, played against each other for as long as they can remember at this point on the AAU circuits or even the high school level if they're local to each other. So these guys being able to recruit each other and being able to help Indiana and help the staff recruit, I think that goes a long way as well.
Yeah, somebody, where was it? Russell asking, Zach, why was the Purdue basketball team training with the Navy SEALs this weekend? Well, I'm going to assume they need some toughness. But great question, but a unique deal for Matt Painter.
Yeah, at this point, you can't really question what Matt Painter does, right? I mean, if he trains with Navy SEALs, if he trained with a team full of ballerinas, I mean, you can't question what Matt Painter does because it's worked on the basketball court so far during his time at Purdue. But yeah, I just probably assume that he's looking to build some toughness. I mean, you've got a lot of guys out there that it'll be a different kind of look Purdue team, at least from a depth perspective, I would think. There's still a lot of depth pieces that have carried over. You still got the Mason Gillises, the Braden Smith, not the Mason Gillises, the Trey Kaufman Wrens, the Fletcher Lawyers, Braden Smiths of the world. But you bring in a guy like Omar Meyer, who's projected to start. You've got Daniel Jacobson, who probably needs to put some pounds on to compete at the Big Ten level. He's a great shot blocker. But yeah, Purdue, they're going to be a problem once again. They're going to come into the season one of the top one or two teams in the country. So you can't question anything that Painter does at this point.
No, and it's also, you know, it goes to the fact that this is kind of a make or break year for Purdue, if you want to be honest, as far as winning a national championship. They have a lot of pressure on them as far as that goes, in my opinion, because they've had this core group together for so long. And Matt Painter's already been through having the player of the year for back-to-back years and with Zach Edey, and he's got all that he has coming back, and they're already – the expectations are so high. So he's pulling out all the stops to try to get to that ultimate goal that Purdue has never reached, the mountaintop of winning a national championship.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Not winning with back-to-back AP Player of the Year, Zach Edey. Now you've got Braden Smith as his last rendezvous. You've got Trey Kaufman Wren, who's an All-American too, Fletcher Lawyer as well. This is the last year for those guys. So it feels like this is kind of the last hurrah for Purdue. They're going to reload. They're still going to be good. It's what Matt Painter does. He brings in good players, and he has this team constantly good. But it does kind of feel like the difference between winning maybe a Big Ten title, being 1, 2, or 3 in the Big Ten, and actually being able to compete and being a threat to win a national championship, this does feel like a year that Purdue really does need to win it all, because you don't have Braden Smith after this year. You don't have Fletcher Lawyer or Trey Kaufman Wren after this year. Is a guy like Jakari Harris or CJ Cox ready next year to vault this team into the national championship conversation again and replace Braden Smith, who is going to be the favorite to win player of the year this year? I don't know. I don't think so. So we'll have to see with Purdue. But this does – I wouldn't classify it it's harsh to classify it as a make or break year because Purdue's always going to be good with Matt Painter there, but it is the expectations are high and Purdue fans are hoping and expecting for a national championship sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. Indiana football, of course, rolling a gigantic 63-10 win over the number 9 at the time ranked Illini and introduced themselves as a legit challenge to the college football playoffs. Again, not only that, Fernando Mendoza is currently the betting favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. Crazy, baby.
Yeah, it's crazy times in Bloomington. This turns out last year was not kind of a flash in the pan. 2024, Indiana is not just going to be a one-hit wonder. Indiana is back to do more damage and make more noise here in 2025. And it's really difficult to put into words. There's only so many ways you can talk about a team dismantling a top 10 team like Indiana did to Illinois, but beating them by 53 points, beating them by 7 scores. Again, there's just only so many ways that you can put that kind of evisceration into words. And I think that what Fernando Mendoza has been able to do is special. And there's been so much talk over the last year, and there was so much talk last season about how special Curtis Rourke was. And he did it on one ACL. Let's not forget that. He was spectacular and ended up getting drafted because of what he did last season. But Fernando Mendoza is just a little bit more. He's just got that little bit more of an it factor about him. And, of course, with the John Mateer news at Oklahoma yesterday that he could miss some time, Fernando Mendoza vaults that number one ranking in the Heisman kind of odds, I guess I would say. But he's just got that it factor. There's just, again, I've said it every time that he gets brought up, there's just some throws out there, Jim, that he makes that you just think to yourself, how is this guy not a first-round pick? How is this guy not one of the first two or three quarterbacks taken in the NFL draft next season? He just makes some throws that are unbelievable, and I still don't think we've seen the full Fernando Mendoza. I mean, last week, the throw to E.J. Williams in the end zone, that was probably his best throw of the year, but I don't think we've truly seen, like, an elite level, like, oh my goodness, stop what you're doing, rewind that and replay it three or four times.
He hasn't unloaded it yet. The top power that he has that I've seen. I saw him at the pro day last year and I was like, wow, he was throwing 50, 60 yard bombs for completions. And we'll see that as the Big Ten schedule goes along, especially they've got a tough one this week with Iowa, but then following that, it is really going to come down. You're going to have two of the top Heisman Trophy winners playing against each other. So, but, thanks a lot. Appreciate you. Look forward to the rest of your content at thehoosier.com. Like I said, subscribe now while you can check it out for just $1.50 off and a free subscription to The Athletic with all of that, in addition to all the other things they've added, like Field of 68 and tons of the most coverage that there is in all of college sports. Appreciate you, sir.
Thanks so much, Jim, as always.
You betcha. There was Zach Browning. Hey, big thanks to each and every one of you guys. Dylan Sin, Kyle Nedrep, K-Bro, Kevin Brockway, and Zach Browning. Most importantly, each and every one of you. Back tomorrow to do it again with another full house. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.